From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Today for Al Martin. He's actually in Orlando right now. Again, what is up, Mid-Michigan? I'm Isaac Constance. So, anyway, today we've got a great show on tap for you guys. I'm excited to talk about because we just witnessed one of the best battles, one of the best face-offs between two athletes of all time, and that's the British Open. I like to call it a battle royale because it was at Royal Troon and was Phil Mickelson versus Henrik Stenson. Can't wait to talk about that. Also, the Detroit Tigers did not look so shabby themselves. How about Jared Sautalamakia? Walk-off homer, bottom of the ninth, in Comerica, gave the Tigers a 4-2 victory over the Kansas City Royals. That's an exciting topic of conversation. Can't wait to get to that. Also, Denzel Valentine was mixing it up in the Las Vegas Summer League with somebody who he knows fairly well. That's Kay Felder. And Denzel Valentine came out on top. He'll actually face in the championship game of the Las Vegas Summer League tonight, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Also, we'll talk about Warren Dunn and his connection, of course, to the unfortunate Baton Rouge shooting. Unfortunately, we will talk about that. And then, you know what else is up? We've got weekend winners for you. So, hey, if you have any questions, any whatsoever, give me a call, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, the show's just begun. Let's get to our current sports quick hit headliners for today, July 18th. It was a battle for the ages at Royal Troon over in Scotland with Mickelson versus Stenson. After Stenson was just inches away from completing a 62 himself, and Mickelson was inches away on Thursday, from completing a 62, only one man could walk away with the trophy, and that is Henrik Stenson, the first ever Swede to win a major. On the last day of the British Open, Stenson shot a 63, only the second golfer ever to do so and take home the ring. He won the 145th Open and did so with major championship pressure on the line. The accolades don't stop from there. However, Stenson shot the lowest total score in a major history with a 264 over the course of four rounds. He posted a final round 63, the 27th person ever to do that, and he uprooted Mickelson, whose rounds of 63, 69, 70, and a Sunday 65 were great, but they weren't good enough to top Stenson's negative 20 on the competition, not by three shots. Coming in third was J.B. Holmes, trailing by 14 shots. 14 shots. Unbelievable. Tigers walk off. Jared Sautalamakia's drive to high and deep right field was never in doubt, and the backup catcher raised his arm in celebration, finger pointing upwards as he knew it was out of the park. Sautalamakia's two-run homer in the bottom of the ninth inning gave the Tigers a 4-2 victory over the Kansas City Royals on Sunday and giving them a 2-3 advantage on the homestand. Tyler Collins and Sautalamakia were the only two Tigers runs to score that were earned, as the other two runs were off of a balk and a wild pitch. Quote, "It felt really good because I was starting to get a little gassed," Sautalamakia said. "It's been a while since I've played, so I was really ready to get out there." Former Tiger Joaquin Soria pitched it just a little too close to Salty, and wha-bam, it was gone. Current Tiger Francisco Rodriguez, K-Rod, pitched a perfect top of the ninth and got the win. The Tigers took 2 of 3 from Kansas City, and next up is the lowly Minnesota Twins, as the Tigers hope to keep the momentum going following the All-Star break. Denzel Valentine baked in a 3-point shot that ignited an 8-0 run to give Chicago an 80-75 lead with 1:14 remaining. Kay Felder and the Cavs never regained their balance after losing that lead, and the 2016 number 14 pick, that's Denzel Valentine, finished with 13 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals in the Summer League quarterfinal, or semifinal, excuse me. Cristiano Felicio led the Bulls with 18 points, and former Arkansas big man Bobby Portis added 16 to go with 9 boards. Oakland University's Kay Felder continued to impress the scouts and his teammates on the Cavaliers with 22 points on 8 for 14 shooting as he looks set to assume the backup point guard role for the former champs with Matthew Dellavedova out the door and in Milwaukee. He also dished out 5 helpers but wasn't enough for his team. Valentine and the Bulls will play the Timberwolves tonight at 9 on ESPN2. It's all for the Marbles, and the Las Vegas Summer League Championship is on the line. The Los Angeles Clippers have waived former Michigan State alum Brandon Dawson. The team announced Sunday that they were dropping the 6'6 power forward, likely to make moves and welcome in Brandon Bass, a journeyman big who's been around the league for some time. Dawson appeared in just 6 games with the Clippers, averaging 0.8 points and 0.7 rebounds in 4.8 minutes after they acquired him in a draft day deal with the New Orleans Pelicans. He was arrested on March 13th in Los Angeles on suspicion of domestic violence, but was never charged, according to his agent, BJ Armstrong. Dawson was spat back into the D-League, playing a combined 29 games for Erie, Bakersfield, and Grand Rapids, averaging 10.3 points, 4.9 rebounds, and 1.1 steals in that stint. After being released in March, after 7 years of work with the Texans, CBS reported that former Houston Texan and running back Arian Foster has scheduled workouts for both Miami and Detroit. Foster sat out the final 13 weeks of the 2015 season after suffering a torn Achilles following a Week 4 loss. I really hope the Lions do get Foster too. That's one of my favorite players. Tennessee guy from the South, worked hard, great running back. Go get him, Detroit. Javid Best, speaking of Detroit running backs, will listen and run the 100-meter dash in the Rio Olympics under the St. Lucia flag. The former Cal Bears and Detroit Lions running back has been approved to compete for the Caribbean island in the games this summer, becoming the first ever NFL player to qualify for a Summer Olympic squad. Congratulations, Javid. Best was a first-round selection for the Lions before concussions curtailed an otherwise promising career just 4 years in. Best was always best renowned for his speed. Good luck, Javid, once again. An investigator, Richard McLaren, who is a Canadian law professor, discovered that Russia's state-implemented doping program altered at least 312 falsified results and endured from 2011 through at least last year's World Swimming Championships. The IOC Executive Board will meet Tuesday to make initial decisions on possible sanctions and other reprimands for the Rio Summer Games. And finally, sad news here. Golden State Warriors legend Nathaniel Thurman passed away at 74 after fighting leukemia. Known as Nate the Great, the Hall of Fame center is one of the best ever to play at his position and one of the best defenders to ever play. The passing of the 7-time NBA All-Star has been met with eulogies from all over. King James tweeted, "Damn man, RIP Akron's own Nate Thurman. Knowing you played on the same rec league as me growing up gave me the hope of making out. Thanks." That wraps it up for your current sports quick headliners. If you have any questions, call 517-355-9527. Let's get to the show.
Escobar shades up the middle, the 1-0. Swinging a fly ball, right field, way back and right in. Gone! An absolute no-doubter off the bat of Soltalamacchia. Collins in to score. Soltalamacchia around third, and he's heading to the Monsignor home. Well, that was in his buggy whip. We're waiting for that. Big old home run to Party Pop for over 100 years. That was a more than a no-doubter. That was a rifle shot out of here. Wow.
Man, you gotta love baseball announcers, I'll tell you what. Those were great calls of Jared Soltalamacchia's walk-off blast against Joaquin Soria and the Kansas City Royals just yesterday. Towering home run shot to right field, and gosh, he knew it. You could tell he knew it. The second it left his bat, he put his hand to the sky, pointed upwards, thanked the man up above, and tried it on home. Tyler Collins preceding him. Just a great day for the Tigers, and you know what? There's going to be a lot of talk about that. I'm interested to see what all the pundits of the Detroit Tigers have to say, because whenever there's a dramatic walk-off finish like that, like Soltalamacchia's walk-off homer, the talk's going to be, is this the turning point? Are the Tigers back? Are they going to make the playoffs? All of this talk is going to start swarming around the team, the Detroit Tigers, because that's just sports talk, you know. Everybody always loves to overreact whenever something hits. But you know what? Enjoy the moment, too. It was such a great home run, and I think it actually spawns a bunch of new questions for this team. I mean, the catching position for the Tigers, it's been solid defensively. Very solid. James McCann, great young player. I'm crazy about him. He was so big for this team last year. This year, he's hitting 199. Yeah, 199. Not even the old double buckaroo. Not a 200, 199. That's not that great. Soltalamacchia, now in comparison, a 206 compared to a 199, that ain't too much better. But at the same time, Soltalamacchia started off the year so hot. I don't know if you guys remember, but he was leading this team in home runs, second in RBIs, about 10 games through. He was the guy who was the glue for this Detroit roster when nothing else was working. So to see him get this, and, you know, you heard his quote in the Quick Hit headliners. He was so relieved to have hit this home run. He needed it. It was long overdue for someone who did lose his spot to James McCann because he struggled after coming out of the gate so quickly. Quote, it felt really good because I was starting to get a little gassed. It's been 7 or 8 days since I've played, so I was ready to get out of there. Yeah, I can imagine. And that's the thing. James McCann necessarily held down his spot. Soltalamacchia may be making a move for it. I'm interested to see that. We'll talk about that more later. The other player I just got to commend real quick before diving into all sorts of other sports talk. And, of course, we're going to talk about the British Open mainly. I mean, don't worry about that. That was a duel for ages, like I called it. Battle Royale. I do like that title. Some don't catch on, but I hope that one does. That's pretty creative. I've got to give myself some credit for that one. But anyway, Michael Fulmer on the mound for the Tigers. 8 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, and that's the first time in 10 outings that he's allowed more than 1 earned run. And you're telling me that this guy can't be the AL Rookie of the Year? You've got to be kidding me. Michael Fulmer has been the stud for this team. And JV had a good performance earlier in the week, only giving up 2 runs in the opening matchup against this Kansas City Royal teams following the All-Star break. But Michael Fulmer, you can't top what he did. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're talking some Tigers later on in the show, actually. I'll go into more depth about that. But right now, I want to get to the British Open, and if you've got any thoughts on that, if you want to give me what your opinion was on this historic battle between two guys who really have had so many chances of winning before and just couldn't do it, and then one of them had to, and boy, it was dramatic. Anyway, give me a call, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. WKR, and you know what we'll talk about? We'll dish on it, and I'm excited to hear what you guys think about that very topic. So let's not skip over anything. Let's get right to it, because Phil Mickelson was inches away with an 18th hole putt just on Thursday of breaking the single-day major record of 62. He will have got 62, set the record. There were 25 other people. 25, fair bit, but still impressive in the long storied history of golf. But 25 people who had hit a 63 before. Mickelson tied them because his putt was inches away. You heard him groan, complain, rightfully so, because it was a nice shot that he hit. Didn't shank it. He didn't pull it. He didn't push it. He hit it perfectly, spot on. And like he said, he didn't believe until that day that the golf gods were a reality. And you know what? Now he does. I mean, I think it's probably a pretty fair assessment, because the thing is, you know, we talk about gods of a sport, no matter what it is, whether it's basketball. Talk about basketball gods with the N1s, or you talk about basketball gods with the ball don't lie. Rasheed Wallace classic. Great one. Because sometimes the basketball guys just don't want to have a team lose unjustly. They don't want a bad call to make the difference, so they've got the ball spin out on a free throw. That's the classic, right? More in golf. And Jack Nicklaus, the legendary golfer, one of the best of all time, echoed exactly what Phil Mickelson stated, which was that the golf guys just weren't too friendly to him because he missed the putt. But anyway, so you fast forward, and Mickelson, you know, he's really got a pretty good scorecard throughout this entire competition. Mickelson was, I mean, let me read it for you, but he was 65 on the final day, 63 on the first day, 69 on the second day, 70 on the third day. A 70 was his lowest score throughout the four rounds. And you know what? The guy still lost. You just feel bad for him at some point, because a 65 on the final day is one of the best showings we've ever seen. Minus 6 on the final day. And again, the golf gods just weren't with him because of a Swede. The first Swede ever to win a major, Henrik Stenson. And I've got to give this guy props. He's 40 years old, the 9th oldest player to ever win his first major. And that was absolutely ridiculous in the fashion in which he did it. On one, it was the 15th hole, I believe. He hit a 50-yard putt straight up, downed it, got a birdie. And that's the difference. Stenson was just putting on point. Stenson got birdie after birdie, and he even had a couple of bogeys on the last day, 2 bogeys. Mickelson didn't have any. I mean, Mickelson was immaculate when it came to making mistakes. He always got the ball on the green and just went from there. But Stenson just had the motivation and inspiration to keep driving. So what I thought is, you know, with Stenson being the first Swede to win a major, what does that necessarily bring you back to? And there was another time where 19 years ago, Jesper Parnevik led after 54 holes at Royal Troon. And he was the closest the Swedes have ever been. Jesper Parnevik. You wouldn't recognize the name, I wouldn't imagine, because he never won a major. No Swedish player had ever won a major. Henrik Stenson just won a major. And he did so in the most dramatic fashion once again. You talk about the battle back and forth between these two guys. For Stenson to go minus 20, averaging a minus 5 every single day on this course. And he did a hell of a lot better than that sometimes even. But minus 20. Mickelson was minus 17. Third place. Minus 6. That was J.B. Holmes. Minus 6. 14 strokes behind the winner. If it weren't for such a record-setting, improbable, and perfect performance from either of these two, I would have turned it off. And I'm not sure if you guys can recognize this in the past when I've talked about golf. I love Jordan Spieth. He's really made it interesting. But traditionally, classically, I didn't grow up watching golf. Not really a golf fan per se. I like it as a relaxing thing, as a way to get away from distant cousins at family reunions. it's nice for that. But outside of that, I'm not really sure how I feel about watching a bunch of guys hit a ball where I could go out, do the same thing. It wouldn't look half as good. The score would be 10 times worse. But at the same time, it's not these feats of unbelievable athleticism, which are just so entrancing. You're just immediately caught up. It's a relaxing game. And I'm a basketball fan. I'm a football fan. I'm a soccer fan. I like things that go a little more fast-paced. And soccer actually does go fast-paced. Don't judge me on that one. But anyway, this game, though, this match between the two was just so back and forth throughout the scorecard every single day, every single round, every single hole. And it wasn't really over until the 15th hole when Stenson did hit that 50-foot shot, which was just so incredible and so unexpected. Mickelson actually had the lead just once in that final round, and that was on the first hole where he got a birdie, and I believe Stenson bogeyed, although I'll have to check on that. But Stenson also had a two-shot lead following that 15th hole. That was the first time in that entire round that, you know, either one was more than one shot behind. So that just shows you how close it was. Stenson also set the record for 264, the lowest score at a major. Stenson eclipsed the open mark of 267 set by Greg Norman at Royal. And then St. George's in 1993 and the overall mark of 265 by David Toms at the 2001 PGA Championship. He also tied Jason Day's record for the lowest ever score under par set last year at the PGA Championship. Mickelson had a bogey-free final round. Stenson had two. Combined, they had an eagle. That belonged to Mickelson. 14 birdies. 9 of those belonged to Stenson. 5 belonged to Mickelson. And just 2 bogeys, both belonging to Stenson. Stenson also hit long putts on the 18th, 20 feet, not bad. 18 foot at the 14th. Birdie. I mentioned the 50 foot at the 15th. Very nice. And then the 16th as well was a very difficult sort of chip that Stenson had to pull off. He did so miraculously. And Mickelson led at the very start of the tournament and he just lost. And we thought, no way Stenson sticks around because this is a guy who's been in the competition for so long. He's 40 years old. He's had so many chances and he just hasn't been able to capitalize. Well, in the Battle Royale, he and Mickelson. Mickelson, now with 11 runner-up finishes, second most ever, only beside the great Jack Nicklaus. Somebody had to come in second, and unfortunately, that was Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson, the 46-year-old, who has been in the game seemingly forever. And this time, experience didn't pay off. It's not that Stenson's inexperienced, but he hasn't won it before. And you know what? That's just the tune of the day. That's how things have been going in the sporting world, particularly golf outings. The last 4 major winners are all newcomers. Jason Day, the 2015 PGA Championship. That was his first. Danny Willett, 2016 Masters. Somebody I had never heard of before. Somebody who I looked up after he did. I confessed to not watching that one. And I looked him up. His ESPN profile didn't even have a profile picture. It was totally empty. I thought, Danny Willett, who's this guy? He's English, I think. He's not Rory McIlroy. He doesn't have as engaging of an accent. And you know what? He just goes out and wins. He puts all the old dogs to sleep. Good for him. Dustin Johnson, 2016 U.S. Open. That was incredible. And now Henrik Stenson, the 2016 British Open. The last 4 major winners. Once again, all rookie winners, all first-timers. And Stenson becomes the only second golfer ever to get a 63 on the last day and win. Remember, he's the 27th ever to get a 63 total. Second golfer to get a 63 on the last day and still win it. So, hey, folks, if you have any comments whatsoever on what we just saw, which is one of the best golf face-offs of all time, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-WKR. We'll chat about it. First, though, I want to actually bring in the man doing my job. Remember, I'm Isaac Constance. I'm filling in for Al Martin. I'm the usual engineer, which is a tough job. So I want to give a shout out to the guy who's doing it right now, Seth Kinker. How are you doing today? I'm doing well. So you weren't able to catch any of that golf outing, were you?
Unfortunately not, no.
But you were telling me before the show, you were saying something about the press conference. I actually did not see that.
So I got home after work, and I went downstairs, and my dad watched the tournament, so he was watching the post-game presser, and it was on. And the questions they were just asking Phil Mickelson, I was just getting so frustrated for him. They were just asking, like, how could you have shot better and things like that. And, I mean, you just talked about it. He played an unbelievable tournament of golf. Like, hats off to Stenson. He got the win. He earned it. He definitely earned it. But by no means should Mickelson be disappointed. I know you mentioned the record of him getting close with the second all-time finishes, but he still made – the purse for the Royal Troon was, what, $9.3 million? He still made over $800,000 for second place. And, yes, you don't want to settle for second, but – he's still getting compensated at the same time.
Yeah. No, he's getting his money. But for somebody who's been in the game so long, who's weathered like Mickelson, at this point, I don't think it is the money. I think it's not accruing those second place finishes anymore. I remember the days, and gosh, I guess we're actually going to take up Al on this. Every single time we talk about golf, we got to mention name drop Tiger Woods. But I remember in the duels between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, seemed like poor Phil was always getting bested by Tiger. Just no matter what he did. Yeah, exactly. And now that Tiger's out of the game, in all fairness, I mean, even if he competes, he's not really a threat. He's not a predator. He's just somebody who's there for the cameras. Mickelson still can't win against the new guys. And, you know, 2013 was his time at the British Open. It's been a little bit cold since then, and you know, he's got five majors right now. Without doubt, a Hall of Famer. Without doubt, one of the best we've seen. But being a second-place guy, it's got to get old. It's got to get old. And, yeah, it's funny you mentioned the post-game presser, the post-golf outing presser, because what I noticed in every single article that I was reading about this, and I watched it as well, it was so thrilling, entertaining. But afterwards, all the stories were on Phil Mickelson.
Right?
Just
No credit. Stenson got the credit. But, like, that was the big story, how he had – I just don't get it. Like, poor Swede. Like, the first guy to win it for them and just no attention for him.
Yeah. And you know what? It's rightful that Mickelson should get some attention. He just played one of the best golf rounds and two of the best golf rounds. One of the best golf tournaments comprehensively that we've seen in the past 15, 20 years. He deserves his attention, but he lost. I mean, somebody else deserves more attention. Somebody who posted one of the best scores we've ever seen, arguably the best score we've ever seen, a 246. Good gracious. And all that gets talked about is he's the first Swede. He was 40 years old. It's his first major. And now on to Mickelson. The golf gods hate him. He's like Jack Nicklaus. I know. So, anyway, folks, if you've got any thoughts whatsoever about that, once again, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know what? We're actually going to hit our first break right now. After we get done with that, we're going to talk some Detroit Tigers, their walk-off win against the Kansas City Royals. What that means for the team, if anything, what that means for Brad Ausmus, if anything, and what that means for the catcher position, if anything. We're also going to talk the Summer League. And, of course, at the end of the show, we're going to hit you with weekend winners. Stay tuned. All this and more. WKR AM 870. This is Current Sports. Welcome back to WKR Sports, Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance. I'm filling in with Al Martin today, and he's actually out of town in Orlando enjoying the sunshine. Not too bad up here ourselves. But anyway, we just got done talking about the British Open, and during the break, I was looking up a little bit more just because this is so unprecedented. We've never seen a face-off like this. And, you know, one matchup I wanted to bring up, which a lot of people are comparing it to, is Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus dueling the sun in 1977. And Watson hit a 65, Nicklaus hit a 66, Nicklaus went home. And, you know, that's kind of funny considering that Mickelson's 11 runner-up finishes is only second ever to Jack Nicklaus. But the stat I saw, which I just hit up Seth and I told him, oh my gosh, can you believe this? Mickelson's minus 17 was 11 shots better than third place, right? Nobody had won the Open by 11 or more shots since 1870. Stenson won it by 14. It's not even close. And it was still a battle between two guys. It was still so entertaining. What an outing. That's courtesy of Justin Rice. So good research, my man. But anyway, we're going to move on to the Detroit Tigers. And if you've got anything to say about that, call in 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. But the Detroit Tigers just finished up a series which I thought went pretty well against the third place AL Central team, Kansas City Royals. Tigers took 2 of 3 from them. It was at home at Comerica, and K-Rod actually got the win on Sunday. He's now got the second most saves in the AL, and the Tigers took a big 2 of 3 from the Royals, helping themselves out in that wild card positioning, at least taking sole position of second place within the AL Central. And, you know, we saw on Saturday Mike Pelfrey on the mound. Guess what happened? Loss, no surprise. I mean, 8 runs from the Tigers pitching staff on that one. You know, Tigers just have a few pitchers where once they hit the mound, you can turn the TV off. It's kind of nice. I mean, you don't have to watch the entire game, but you'd rather not count them as losses. Whatever. Verlander, though, first game that series, took the win. 4-2 game. He, once again, was pretty good. Maybe regaining a little bit of that form, but I don't want to speak too soon. But the Tigers ace right now. Man, forget Justin Verlander. Forget Jordan Zimmermann. Forget any of those guys. It's Michael Fulmer, a rookie. And the guy who should be AL Rookie of the Year, in my opinion. I don't think it's that close. He allowed 2 runs in 8 innings. Nice, long performance. He was stout on the mound. And the most impressive thing for me is that, you know, the guy's got an innings limit. He understands why. He said so to the media, but he just all takes it in stride. He's so mature for his age. He's unhassled by any situation that he gets himself into. He's cool and composed on the mound. What I instantly saw when I saw this kid is he gets out of 2-out situations with bases in position to score better than just about anybody else. This kid's a rookie. And he did the exact same thing against the Royals on Sunday. Kansas City versus Detroit. And Michael Fulmer, once again, went 8 innings, allowed 2 runs in that entire time. Both were earned. 5 strikeouts, two walks. You know, only 95 pitches on the day. He's got 2.13 ERA on the season. He was spectacular. He was superb, as was Jared Solskjaer, who hit the walk-off homer. Only 1 of 3 on the day, 3 at-bats. Also drew himself a walk, though. The other 2 were strikeouts. Solskjaer just hit 2.06 on the season. Not too pretty, but coming up when the Tigers need it the most, you heard in our intro to start the show, the multiple calls of his home run shot, which looked like it belonged somewhere else. I'd say San Diego for the home run derby if I had to, because Solskjaer just crashed that one. The second it smacked the bat, you heard it take off. You knew it was out of the field. He was batting from his left-hand side, hit it, home run. Joaquin Soria, the former Tigers pitcher, walks off the field, a little bit disgusted, I'm sure. And Tyler Collins scores first, a guy who was actually just in the conversation of whether he should be up or not. Clutch job by him, getting himself into a position to be on base in the bottom of the ninth in the first place. He's a guy who's actually just hitting 161 on the season. So nothing too great there. But Celso Lamacchi, of course, it didn't matter who was on base. That was doing it for the game. The Tigers walk off 4-2, 48-44 now, 25-17 at home. And the Royals are 46-45. Tigers are heading in to face the Minnesota Twins. And the Minnesota Twins, they're notoriously, I don't want to be mean, but bad. Very bad. 33-58 with a 21-game break on Cleveland, who, of course, is topping the AL Central standing. So for the Tigers, like I was saying before, the conversation goes back to, is this the breaking point? Is this what changes everything in the season? A walk-off win, home run, unbelievable. Such a shot like that against a good team, in-division rival, somebody who's coming off such a hot season. And Celso Lamacchi, of all people, I think there could be a move. Now, if you talk about changing things, I think Celso Lamacchi should get maybe a few more at-bats, a few more games than he has been recently. Then James McCann, a guy who's batting 199 on the season, that's McCann, compared to 206 from Celso Lamacchi. That's not that much of a difference, I admit. But here's the difference that I see. Celso Lamacchia's slugging percentage is 447. McCann's is 309. On base percentage for Celso Lamacchia is 329. McCann, 249. The thing is, Celso Lamacchia is driving in runs when they're in position. He hits home runs too. He's a clutch batter. Like I said, he started off the season, I think, with like 8 home runs, probably 15 games through, something like that. That's just an estimate. Don't quote me on that one. But he was starting off really hot. He obviously cooled down, but maybe he's regaining some of his form. But for the Tigers, they definitely, in my opinion, look good going forward against the Minnesota Twins. That's a matchup where the Tigers have fared well. And it's a matchup where everybody's fared well against the Twins. That's also at home, which helps them out. And the Tigers, like I mentioned, they're much better at home than they are away. 8 games above 500 at home. And, you know, that's a big difference for this Detroit team. But then the question comes, you know, can the Tigers still make the playoffs? And Al and I were debating this on the show probably, you know, 1 week ago. And I thought Brad Ausmus hasn't done a bad job. Now, I don't think the Tigers can necessarily make the playoffs just because of the positioning of other teams. I mean, you've got one wild card spot that the Boston Red Sox, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Houston Astros are going for, all better than the Tigers, all, in my opinion, arguably better teams than the Tigers. I'd at least take the Red Sox with David Ortiz having a decent, more than a decent, a fantastic bow-out year. They've got Rick Porcello killing it on the mound, along with David Price, former Tiger. And, you know, Betts is one of my favorite players. Mookie Betts, somebody with just so much swagger. He reminds me of one of my favorite players growing up, Juan Pierre. But I don't think this is the turnaround point for the Tigers. I mean, we see so many walk-offs in the season, and that was a great one. Don't get me wrong. It was worthy of news and of people getting all excited and all that stuff, but at the same time, that's not the changing point for this team. That's not what's gonna differ in terms of the playoffs and not the playoffs. So what's gonna matter for the Tigers is going forward. They need more and more streaks like this against the Royals. They've got 2-4-2 victories, an 8-4 loss. So the bats were working all right, but it's the pitching, at least when Pelfrey wasn't on the mound, which really pulled them through that series. The Tigers are going to need that consistently against good teams. Because before the Royals, Tigers lost 3-4 to the Blue Jays, allowing 6-3, 6-5 runs. They only won the one where they allowed two runs that game. Against the Indians, gave up 2 runs one game. They won that one. The others gave up 12-5. Lost both those. Then you go to the Rays. You know, the Tigers' pitching was stout. Very impressive during that series. 1-2-2, and then 7. Sometimes your offense is going to pull you through. But the trend that obviously appears is, how can this pitching staff fare going forward for this team? For the Detroit Tigers, I think they've got their ace. And that's you know, the guy nobody really knew going into the season, Michael Fulmer, not even the biggest rookie that you will have pointed out. You will point out Daniel Norris before him. But Michael Fulmer is a stud. He's going to keep being consistent as the season progresses. He is the Detroit Tigers' best pitcher. Justin Verlander, hopefully regaining some footing on this team. And it sure does look like that. But I don't know. You tell me, is this a turning point for the Detroit Tigers, or is this just another game, albeit an entertaining one? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I actually want to throw this one out to the engineer, Seth Kinker. Seth, what do you think about the Tigers going forward? Good? Bad? I mean, does this change anything?
Sorry about that. I really don't think it does. I agreed with your take on that. I mean, moving forward, they just haven't played consistent enough with all the firepower they have. It's just been disappointing, honestly. Looking throughout the season where they are, but just if you look before the season started, the potential for that team, I just don't think they've lived up to it at all this season.
They definitely haven't. I mean, David Price leaving, and then you've got Francisco Rodriguez coming in. And K-Rod's done a great job. Like I mentioned, second most saves in the AL. Nothing to complain about there. And then you've got Nick Castellanos having the season of a lifetime. You've got all these big-name acquisitions. For once, the Tigers actually dish out some money. Jordan Zimmerman, Justin Upton, all coming in. Now, J.D. Martinez goes down hurt. That's a big deal for this team, admittedly. But at the same time, not enough for the Tigers to not be in the playoffs. I mean, I think this is a team, and I differ significantly with some of the main Tigers heads in the area, and I don't think this is a World Series team. I still think they're a couple pieces away. But this is a playoffs team. I don't think it's necessarily Brad Ausmus's fault, but at the same time, I don't think that this is a team where you point to one walk-off and say, that makes the difference. I don't think it does compared to all of these other teams, because at the end of the day, to play with the best in the playoffs, you got to eventually beat the best. And the Tigers have chronically proven that they can't do that against the Indians, the Blue Jays, no matter the Red Sox, no matter who you want to chalk it up against, the Tigers are subpar against 500 teams or above. Against sub 500 teams, they're fine. But no, against the best, they just can't do it.
Well, what couple pieces do you think they're away from? Because like you mentioned, they spent the money. They got Jordan Zimmerman. They got K-Rod. K-Rod's having a great season and still no results. So what couple pieces are they away from missing, you think?
It's a tough one. I mean, I'm not a baseball GM. I can't necessarily throw out any specific names for you. But the outfield obviously is almost shored up, because once you get J.D. Martinez back and you've got Justin Upton, you can't let him go at this point. Then you've got in center field Cameron Maben, who's been one of the stars of this team so far. Infield, Iglesias ain't going anywhere. Kinsler's awesome. Cabrera's the best hitter in the league, arguably still. Third base, Castellanos. Maybe you need another catcher, despite Saltalamacchia's home run, like I mentioned, 206, still don't cover it, sorry. But I think it's just a team that might need slight upgrades in every single position. And I mentioned consistency. Get a little more depth, so that the guys aren't so tired. You heard Saltalamacchia say he's tired. You hear the pitchers saying they're tired. You hear the bullpen always having to go through the same pieces because they're so shallow. So I hate to chime on the bullpen again and again, but I think that's the easiest fix for this team. But no, I think they might need another star player, to be honest. What about you?
Just pitching. I mean, I know they spent the money there, and obviously they've performed, but maybe, I don't know, with Sanchez falling off how he did, at least Verlander started to play better again, but I don't know. Do you think, how long do you think Ausmus lasts if this keeps up the way it does into next season?
I don't think he makes it into next season if this team doesn't make the playoffs. Okay. But I think that he, without a doubt, at this point going forward, he's above 500. They're in the conversation. You've got to remember that things could be worse. You could be the Twins. At the end of the day, you could be the White Sox, a team that totally fell off the face of the map. So firing a manager, as easy as it is, it's not a good solution always. You've got to have the right guy in mind. I don't think the Tigers do. I don't know who that would be. I think it takes some offseason scouting. But let the season play out. See where you go. See what pieces and players you can retain after free agency. See who you can get maybe in a trade via the draft or whatever. And then we'll go from there. What's your thoughts on the Tigers? Call in 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We're in the last segment of the show, the last quarter. So we're going to hit our second break and final break of the day. When we get back, we're going to talk about the unfortunate unfolding in Baton Rouge, Warren Dent's comments on that, as well as Denzel Valentine versus Kay Felder in the Summer League semifinals. All then more in WKR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. I'm Isaac Constance, filling in for usual host Al Martin. Again, this is WKR's Current Sports, and it is Monday, July 18th. We just finished up a conversation about the Detroit Tigers standing after talking about the British Open Battle Royale, as I'm calling it, because, of course, it's Royal Troon, the site of that setting. But anyway, first off, I actually want to get to a very sad story, unfortunately, where three Baton Rouge police officers from my home state of Louisiana were slain again in seemingly an attack which was designed to kill blatantly police officers with no attempt to mask that. And three passed away. I believe four more were injured and one is in critical condition. That's in Baton Rouge. And a player, former player, I should say, who has an especially close connection to the situation as Baton Rouge native, went on to play for the Atlanta Falcons and other teams in a decorated NFL career, and that's work done. His mother, Betty Smothers, was actually killed in Baton Rouge in 1993 as a police officer helping solve a robbery. She was shot down and died. Dunn, 18, had to care for five brothers and sisters by himself, and he made these comments to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Quote, "My heart breaks for the families and law enforcement officers in Baton Rouge who have lost loved ones. I've been in similar shoes. It will change their lives and leave them reeling with questions for years to come. It is a shame. So many officers who are out there on the front lines have tremendous heart for what they do. These acts of violence don't solve anything, and if my voice can add to the movement to stop it, then I'd consider that a good thing. The reality of our world is that there is a lot of unrest in our communities, particularly where police shootings are happening. I feel close to this subject. It has touched me very personally. I speak for no one other than myself, and I support law enforcement. I also support the community of Baton Rouge because they were there for me and my family. If I could have any effect, I'd ask the community to stop the violence, to cool down, and to come together to figure this out. There's nothing we can't do, but we have to work together to make sure something positive can come from yet another tragedy in my hometown. We can't just sit around and talk about how horrible this all is. We have to do something. And that means it always starts with the individual. One of the things I am doing is taking the role of fatherhood very seriously so I can raise a son who makes a positive contribution. And then we have to give justice a chance to work. When people are intentional about their use of guns against others, we have to make sure the message that crime doesn't pay means something." I couldn't hear that any clearer. I think work done is spot on. And, you know, being from Louisiana, knowing how close I am to Baton Rouge, I see friends' videos, Snapchats, Twitter videos of them involved in protests in the Baton Rouge community. And, you know, it definitely hits home for me. I mean, that's very close to my hometown in New Orleans. And it's sad to see everything. And what's even more upsetting to me is how fractured the opinions are on it. What hits me is you don't have to pick a side on this issue necessarily. You don't have to say, oh, those guys deserve to die and these guys didn't. I mean, that's entirely incorrect and wrong, no matter how you look at it. These police officers who have been killed, the eight between Baton Rouge and Dallas, never did anything wrong. They were good influences, positive influences on their communities. Now, did Philando Castile and Alton Sterling do anything wrong necessarily either? No. Nobody deserved to die in all of these situations, but yet we see people just taking sides either. Well, maybe if the police didn't kill black men, then they wouldn't be killed themselves. Maybe if black men didn't kill police, then they wouldn't be killed. That's entirely, entirely incorrect. Nobody here is to blame for what happened in Baton Rouge or in Minnesota or in Dallas, except for the individual who perpetrated the crime. That's all there is to it. Black Lives Matter is not represented by cop shooters. Police officers are not represented by police officers who individually act on their own wavelength and go out of line and kill civilians who obviously are not doing anything wrong. It's that simple. There are 10 deaths that recently happened, which shouldn't have happened, and you know what? I think we should mourn all of them. But you know what? Now moving on to a more positive note. Semifinal matchup between Denzel Valentine and the Chicago Bulls and Khalil Felder and the Cleveland Cavaliers, who paid $2.4 million for that little kid. 5'9". Fun story about Khalil Felder, actually, just real quick, is 2 years ago, or maybe 1 year ago, at Moneyball, Al and I were actually covering it and walked in. We both noticed this short little dude on the court. We're like, what's he doing? He's shorter than both of us. I mean, it was one of those moments where really maybe you get a little bit cocky, or you know, you just assume certain things, and that's why you don't assume. And because 5 seconds later, we saw the guy run up 2 steps to the basket following his dribble, throw down a windmill. He probably was looking straight at the middle of the box on the backboard, and we're like, oh, that's Khalil Felder. And of course, now look at Khalil Felder, and he's putting up 22 points and 5 assists in the summer league. He's a star, LeBron James, because let's not lie, we all know who the GM of that Cleveland Cavaliers team is. That's LeBron James. Paid $2.4 million to get him onto the team to replace Matthew Dellavedova, who obviously didn't do too shabby for that team that just won a championship against one of the best teams ever. Anyway, they went up against Denzel Valentine and the Chicago Bulls, the 14th overall pick in the Las Vegas Summer League. And it was really a good game down the stretch. You just see them going back and forth, back and forth. Denzel Valentine and the Bulls eventually prevailed 85-79. And Zell took over. Coming down the stretch, he was confident. You saw his parents in the crowd hooting and hollering because he banked in a three. I don't think he called bank, but he hit it. And it was the start of an 8-0 run that gave Chicago an 80-75 lead that they'd trot away with and ultimately win this game. Another player on Chicago I just got shout out, and Denzel Valentine, he's a classic example, and we saw this at Michigan State. He's a guy that can score 13 points, can score 30 points, can score 5 points, and have essentially the same impact. Now, we know a few players like that. We don't know many players like that who can do it offensively. Denzel Valentine is just such a good rebounder, such a good passer, and you know, he's an underrated defender, but it's really his offensive abilities at the point guard position, being able to size up his defense and take him to school, which makes him so unique. You see him finish with 13 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals in their win over the Cavaliers, concluding all action in the Las Vegas Summer League except for tonight's game, 9 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2 against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And Summer League MVP Tyus Jones should be an interesting matchup there. Another guy I got a shout out for the Bulls, though, is Bobby Portis. Arkansas big man with a big motor. I mean, the guy just works as hard as anybody I ever seen play Summer League basketball. 16 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists. I think he's going to be a good pro. Reminds me a little bit of a undersized Paul Millsap. Just a little bit skinnier. But in terms of the way that guy works, he's going to be able to do a lot. But anyway, Seth, did you catch any of that game yesterday? Pretty good one.
I got to catch the highlights. I was working again, and I ended up catching, yeah, I caught the highlights of it. But I've been watching, I've been keeping an eye on both of them. They're both local guys, and always rooting for the local guys. And my buddy had went to, attends Oakland, and he had sent me a video of Kay Felder a couple years ago, like before I had really heard about him. And
yeah,
that was the year he made SC Top 10 with one of his alley-oop dunks. On the he was on the receiving end of it as well.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That's just when I started to become a fan of the guy, and he's just so fun to watch.
Yeah, he doesn't let you down. Who's been more impressive for you in the summer league, Kay Felder or Denzel Valentine?
Or
you know what? I'll throw in another name in there because the guy just inked a contract with the San Antonio Spurs, Bryn Forbes.
And even Costello got his the other day with the Atlanta Hawks as well. I'd say Denzel, just because everybody knew that how after four years at Michigan State, how good of a player he was to be. He was NBA ready, but it'd be interesting to see how he actually performed. And it's only summer league. Once again, we got to take that with a grain of salt and see how it is once we get to the regular season. But he's done what he's needed to do. He's been able to score. He's been able to distribute. And he's even been able to rebound, bringing the ball up the floor, which is what the Bulls needed from him.
I love that. Yeah, I agree. I think Denzel Valentine, too. The other thing is we've seen guys go off in the summer league who are undersized. And as great as that is, I'm not sure if it necessarily translates always to the NBA. But I mean, you got see guys like Pierre Jackson and others put up a display in the summer league, Jimmer Fredette, and you know what? Once it hits the NBA, they can't stay in the league. But real quick, 2 minutes left. We're going to hit weekend winners. Let's go for it.
Kay Felder is actually going to be my weekend winner. Let's see, like against the Bulls, he had 22 points and 5 assists as well. But he's shown that he's essentially going to be able to take over that role that Matthew Dellavedova had, which is backing up Kyrie. A lot of questions about his height, of course, but once he got to the summer league, he's been able to prove so far that there's not really talent's talent, and it shows through. And he's been showing that he's got it. So he's my weekend winner.
I've only got one for you, actually, Javid Best. Running the 100-meter dash in the Rio Olympics for St. Lucia and Island. I really respect that. No matter what adversity he faced, this guy had concussion problems going into the NFL. He couldn't overcome them with the Detroit Lions despite how good he looked, despite how fast he was. He was a Berkeley Bear, too. That's one of my favorite second schools besides MSU, of course. But good for him, the first ever NFL athlete to compete in the track and field Olympics. Good for him. Congrats, Javid. Also, weekend loser for me is Lansing Lugnuts. Unfortunately, they pitched a no-hitter and lost the game 1-0 against the Peoria Chiefs. Oh, poor Luggies. Anyway, folks, that's all we got for you on today's edition of Current Sports. I'm Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin, who's out of town. He'll be back on Friday. But hey, hope you enjoyed the show. Until then, have a good one, people. I'll talk to you tomorrow.